Now, at this point in Proverbs chapter 11, we see a whole series of proverbs which are to do with relationships and to do with relationships generally in the community, but with a progression, it seems, certainly to me, moving with increased spiritual intent. So by the end of verse 31, we've got about the righteous repaid on earth, how much more the wicked and the sinner, and before that, whoever captures souls is wise. So there's a clear spiritual intent at the end, but verse 16 seems to be a bit more prosaic and a bit more looking at life right now. So there seems to be as well in this section three subsections, and the first one is looking at grace in the heart. Grace in the heart. So I'm looking from verses 16 to verse 23. Now you might say, well, why do these verses go together? Well, it seems that they're bracketed together with rarer proverbs focused on women. Look at verse 16, a gracious woman. And then verse 23, a beautiful woman. So that's, sorry, verse 22, a beautiful woman. So, sorry, 16 to 22. A gracious woman and a beautiful woman. And we step through, there's three pairs of proverbs and then one single proverb at the end. So firstly, let's think about grace in the heart and what that says about our character. That's verses 16 and 17. So there's that gracious woman that gets honour and a violent man gets riches. And it's putting a simple question. Honour or riches? What do you want? Many people in this world would say riches. If you were to meet some businessmen and you have a chat with them for a while and you start to find out about them, you find out about their marriage situation, and quite often it's not a marriage or a second marriage or a third marriage. You find out about how they've succeeded, and there's a long trail of people they've crushed, but they've got riches. And they've gone for it. But this verse is encouraging us to think about grace. Where would that grace be? Grace in the heart. Or in other words, in New Testament language, we would say inner beauty. We're thinking here about someone like Ruth. You know, when you read the book of Ruth, the emphasis there is nothing about her physical appearance. In fact, I'm not sure there's really any reference, is there, in the book of Ruth to what she looks like. There is a huge amount in the book of Ruth about a character. And she's the kind of woman that's being held out here and saying, look, we're thinking about the character of someone with grace in their heart. Look at a woman with grace in her heart. She will receive honour. Not necessarily wealth, not necessarily riches in the world's eyes. It's contrasted to that. And the contrast is suggesting maybe she won't. But at the end of the day, do you want honour or do you want riches? Which of those two things would you rather have? Well, that's the woman's character. And in verse 17, we have the contrast with a man's character. A man who is kind, and that word, hesed, a man who is kind benefits himself, but a cruel man hurts himself. Again, it's thinking about the character, but this time it's going further. It's saying, actually, these things do rebound on us. We think about the negative first. Think about those some people who are cruel. Cain didn't go well for him, did it? Joseph's brothers didn't go well for them. Think about, do you remember, so Simeon and Levi? What happened to them? They were scattered in Israel. That was Jacob's summation to them for being cruel. Whereas the man who is kind benefits himself. Ultimately, and we could think there about Joseph in contrast to his brothers, He's got that kindness, showing to being willing to forgive those brothers. And ultimately, it's he who has benefited from it. He knows the grace of God in his life. And so these first two proverbs set out for us our character. If we've got grace in the heart, we're looking for inner beauty. We're looking for kindness. We're looking for this to be seen. And this steps up in the next two verses, verses 18 and 19, because these verses are really about wages or results. So people are searching for or following things. Look at verse 18. The wicked man earns deceptive wages, but the one who sows righteousness will get a sure reward. Sowing righteousness. Whoever is steadfast in righteousness will live, but he who pursues evil will die. And it's that contrast between sowing righteousness in verse 18 and pursuing evil in verse 19. If we put those two together, negatively starting here, you pursue evil, you will die, you earn deceptive wages. When the devil comes to you and offers you something, says, go on, go on, you'll get this. Is he telling the truth? No, he's not. The proverb is saying, if you pursue evil, you think you're going to get something, but actually, you find it's got a sting in its tail. Whereas the one who sows righteousness gets a sure reward. We all want a sure reward, don't we? So the difference between good and evil. Evil is often instant. It's the kind of classic dodgy get-rich-quick scheme. You've got £100 to invest. Devil comes along and says, hey, I'll give you a quick fix. It's going to work. And God says, well, you put it in the bank of heaven. He who sows righteousness will get a sure reward. It's sowing's not a quick thing, is it? You've got to wait. And it's telling us, again, if it builds on from the character, if we've got grace in our heart, if we've got a character that's kind or it's inner beauty, we're willing to wait for the rewards of heaven. The devil says, you've got to have some reward now. It's not fair. Why should you suffer now? God says that lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and thieves do not break in and steal. Hence it is here, a sure reward. A sure reward. There's our wages. And why can we be confident about this? We can be confident about this because if we've got grace in our heart, we've got a character that's good, we're pursuing the right wages, we see that our judge is looking on. That's the next two proverbs together. Those of crooked heart are an abomination to the Lord, but those of blameless ways are his delight. Be assured, an evil person will not go unpunished, but the offspring of the righteous will be delivered. So here we have God's view on things. Now, you know, if you were to take one of these businessmen who I was describing earlier and saying, okay, you talk to someone in the world and they say, well, I mean, you can't be too hard on someone. I mean, okay, his private life's a bit messed up, and okay, maybe some of his dealings are not as good as you want, but he's successful, isn't he? I mean, he's done well. Do we not like to buy his products? They're good, aren't they? You've got them in your home. They're good for you. It's good. I mean, God couldn't look too harsh on him, could it? So some good, some bad. Those of crooked heart are an abomination to the Lord. That's the heart of the evil person. If you've got a crooked saw, can that saw ever saw straight? No. That's the crooked heart. It's like a crooked saw. It's always going the wrong way, and it's always going further and further away from the Lord. It's an abomination. So we shouldn't kid ourselves, and sometimes we like to, don't we? Say, well, I can do the right thing in the wrong way. Or I can do a good thing from bad motives. God says no. He's our judge. He's watching. Those of crooked heart are an abomination to the Lord. But what does it say there? Those of blameless ways are his delights. You might be in a work context and you might be thinking, hey, I'm not going to get anywhere by being blameless. You ever found that? You'd be asked to do something, you say, I can't do that. Person, I'm not going to ask you again. You think, I'm going to be at the bottom of the pile here because I'm never prepared to do what the people want me to do to get ahead. Well, who's your audience? God's the ultimate boss, and his delight is in you if your ways are blameless. But it's not just personal. Look how it goes on to a next level in verse 21. It says, be assured, an evil person will not go unpunished, but the offspring of the righteous will be delivered. That's this sense, this covenantal sense, that we're not just acting as individuals. That if we're setting things up in our homes, if we're parents, or if we want to be parents one day, if we're setting things up to go in the right direction, that this will lead to the offspring being delivered from the wrong way. Isn't that Proverbs? It's all about my son. Don't go that way. Do go this way. Remember, this is a pattern. This is not a promise. Got to understand that. It's a pattern, not a promise. But it is a pattern. That the offspring of the righteous, by following God's ways, will be delivered from the evil of this world. So we've been looking through this section on grace in the heart. We've looked about our character. Those with grace in the heart, the wages they're seeking. Our judge who is watching. And then finally, we have this little proverb on its own, verse 22, which kind of gives an illustration of what grace in the heart is and isn't like. Now, this is not a very PC proverb. So there's your trigger warning. Okay? This is not a very PC proverb. Like a gold ring in a pig's snout is a beautiful woman without discretion. So, firstly, you're imagining in those days women with nose rings. Okay? So that's the picture you've got to have. You're supposed to have a woman looking beautiful with a nose ring. Think about Isaac and Rebecca. There you are. Beautiful woman with a nose ring. And then, remember, we're talking to Jews, so we know that pigs are unclean anyway, before we think about other things. But you've got a pig with a ring in its snout, which it is burrowing down into the dung and the food. That's the picture now. So, like a gold ring in a pig's snout is a beautiful woman without discretion. So it's basically saying, as useless, as horrible as that gold ring is in the pig's mouth, so it is to be beautiful as a woman and not to have discretion. You're like as repugnant as that pig. So that's the picture. You think, wow, strong picture. Solomon's thinking of that. Shall we think of the positive as well? Good to think of the positive. What about a beautiful woman with discretion? Can you think of a beautiful woman with discretion in the Bible? How about Abigail? Abigail. So do you remember that her husband, Nabal, who, interestingly, in this context, is a fool. What does David say of Abigail after she brings him food, even though Nabal didn't want him to have food? David said to Abigail, blessed be the Lord, the God of Israel, who sent you this day to meet me. Blessed be your discretion, and blessed you who kept me this day from blood guilt and from working salvation in my hands. Now, why does this thing seem to climax with this fairly graphic proverb? I think it's just stressing that it's grace in the heart. Man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. And this is a proverb for our days. Now, we're in a very visual age, a very outward age, and it's a what is your profile picture age. It's not asking, is your heart gracious, kind, with discretion? And that's what we should be thinking of as believers. And this is how Proverbs works with us. Proverbs works, not so much we take an individual proverb and learn it, and that's a great thing to do, but that these things kind of wash over us, so we kind of get immersed in Proverbs. And it's this immersive thinking where we're saying heart first, grace in the heart. That's this first section, verses 16 to 22, grace in the heart. But the next section from 23 to 27 is thinking about generosity in action. So it's saying it's not just that our hearts are kind, but our actions are kind. Now, once again, this section has got like a bracket, and the idea here is what is good. So verse 23, the desire of the righteous ends only in good. And verse 27, whoever diligently seeks good seeks favour. So where the last section was three pairs and then a summary proverb, this time we've got two pairs and a summary proverb. And the first pair, verses 23 and 24, looks at generosity in principle. The desire of the righteous ends only in good, the expectation of the wicked in wrath. One gives freely, yet grows all the richer. Another withholds what he should give, and only suffers want. So those things clearly go together from the way they're phrased. You've got the righteous and you've got the wicked. The righteous desires good. The wicked is going to come under God's anger. And there's the generous one growing richer. And there's one holding back and only suffering want. And want there is need, is lack. So Solomon's just saying, in a very straightforward way, if you're generous, it's actually going to help yourself. And you could think of it in this life, couldn't you? If you're a generous person and you get in trouble, it's more likely than not that people will look out for you. Whereas if you're a complete stinge bag and will never give anyone anything, then when you're in trouble, they'll just say, serves you right. You never looked out for anyone. Why would anyone look out for you? That's just a basic pattern of life. The kind of general principle of generosity. Again, even unbelievers recognize that, don't they? That generous people are good people to be around. It's good to be generous. You think of it in terms of presence. So in terms of family, just giving generous presence, and you think, well, they then within their family are appreciated, and then that relationship may well be stronger. Or maybe I just benefited from generous uncles and aunts as a child, but I still have strong relationships with those people. Now let's think about the next stage of this. Generosity in principle moves on to generosity in key things. Generosity in key things, or the main things of life. Verses 25 and 26. Whoever brings blessing will be enriched, and one who waters will himself be watered. The people curse him who holds back grain, but a blessing is on the head of him who sells it. Now, the link there is blessing, but the verses are talking about the essence of life, verse 25, where do we see the essence of life there? Water. Again, we've got to remember, this is the Middle East. Remember, Psalm 1, when it talks about rivers of water, it's talking about irrigation ditches, because irrigation ditches are better than rivers. Rivers dry up, irrigation ditches don't. Water is absolutely precious. And this one says, whoever brings blessing will be enriched, and the one who waters will himself be watered. So if you're generous with the absolute fundamental to life, then again, you will do well. This is talking about care, generosity in action. If you're in the Middle East, you want to share. Think about on the most basic things. There's Eliezer of Damascus, whoever the servant was, goes and sees who's going to be generous in pouring the water for my camels. It's all about water. Generosity in action. And we see food in verse 26. The people curse him who holds back grain, but a blessing is on the head of him who sells it. And you think, well, why would you hold back grain? Well, you know why you'd hold back grain. You've got enough to eat. If you don't sell it, what will happen to the price? Price will go up. And up. And up. And if a few people suffer while it's going up, well, they'll be all the more hungry to buy your grain at an inflated level, safe in your barn. Pursuing wealth. The opposite of generosity. The people curse him who holds back grain, but a blessing is on the head of him who sells it. This is just a common principle. In our country, the time of Elizabeth I, that kind of time, Tudor times, then they used to have you've got the peasants on the land, they get the harvest in, and then you have a bad year, and you've got the harvest, the grain's in the barns, the people are starving, and the people riot. And what do the government do? What do they go and make sure happens in the provinces? They say, open the stores, give them the grain. That was how they worked in Elizabethan days. They said, basically saying, they're starving, they're going to riot, they're peasants, they've got nothing, you've got to give them the grain. Even the world understands that. So how much more, we're saying, for the believer, should the believer be having generosity in action? Where does this stem from? Grace in the heart leads to generosity in action. Well, then we come then to the final one from that section, which is sitting there on its own. And it's there in verse 27. Whoever diligently seeks good seeks favor, but evil comes to him who searches for it. And this proverb is simply telling us we're born for action. Those of you who are still at school here, if I could give you a holiday from now all the way through to the summer, and come back to school in September, I can award you a holiday now. Would you like that? You would. Would your parents like that? They would not. They would not. I'll tell you why. Because this week would be okay. Next week would be okay. But very soon, two words would come. And those two words would be, I'm bored. It would come sooner or later. I'm born. We're born for action. We're born to do something. And the question here is, are we seeking to do something good or are we seeking to do something evil? Hence, the idea the devil finds something for idle hands. And he's saying we're born for action. What type of action? Is it going to be generosity of action coming out of grace in the heart? What type of action are we going to go for? Whoever diligently seeks good seeks favour, but evil comes to him who searches for it. Like, we're going to go one way or the other. No one's neutral. And so you can think about that. What's a good thing to do? And that's a sign of maturity when you start to think, not just, hey, what do I think would be good to do, but what would be helpful for someone else. In the simple terms, if you're thinking I can play something, I'm bored, my brother or sister's bored, I wonder what they'd like to play. We could play together well, and then we'd both be doing something good together. So then we've got grace in heart, we've got generosity in action, but then this seems to hit a higher level when we see, in these final verses, we see the gospel in our sights. So in other words, we're thinking more than just common grace. Now, where do we see this in these last three verses, the last three and four verses? Well, they certainly join together because the righteous comes again and again. You can see that in verse 28. The righteous will flourish like a green leaf. Verse 30, the fruit of the righteous is a tree of life. Verse 31, if the righteous are repaid on earth. So these verses seem to point and link more strongly to gospel teaching in the New Testament. So for example, if the righteous, unlike the one who's trusting in riches, will flourish like a green leaf, where does the green leaf get its life from? What are we thinking New Testament wise? We're thinking Jesus says, I am the vine, you are the branches. Here's someone who is seeing the fruit of the gospel. Instead of riches, they're saying fruit, flourishing like a green leaf. Verse 29, whoever troubles his own household will inherit the wind, and the fool will be the servant to the wise of heart. Who would be more clearly there as a careless parent than Eli? Not really anyone. He troubled his own household, didn't he? Did he bring his sons up well? No. Did he let them go wild? Yes. Did he inherit the winds? Yes. Absolute disaster. So there's Eli. We're seeing deep issues if we trouble our own household. I'm going to speed on for time. Next proverb. The fruit of the righteous is a tree of life, and whoever captures souls is wise. So this is this proverb sitting there in context about the righteous, sitting there in climax of this section. Now, you might say, well, could this just be saying the fruit of the righteous is a tree of life? The righteous are going to see the tree of life, and whoever captures lives, which you could translate this as, is wise. You could. But what does that mean? Is it saying just be nice to people, keep them alive? Or is it saying something more than that? It seems that the traditional view of this proverb is absolutely right. This idea of capturing the souls. We saw this, didn't we, at midweek with Luke chapter 5. Peter was told that he would catch men alive. He'd be fisher of men. And this is why, if we have grace in the heart, if we have generosity in our action, it'll lead to the gospel being in our sight, because we're going to say there's nothing more generous we could do to someone else than seeking to win souls, to capture men alive. Because if we understand ultimate realities, if we understand in context here that riches are going to fail, but the righteous is going to flourish like a green leaf, it's not enough just to keep people fed and watered, is it? We want to see them saved. And therefore, there's fruit even on earth. If the righteous is repaid on earth, how much more the wicked and the sinner? Even the person who's going after souls and sees someone saved, if you see your son or daughter saved, if you see your grandson or granddaughter saved, if you see your friend saved, if you see your sibling saved, if you see your spouse saved, if you see your parents saved, is that not a repayment on earth? It's a great joy. And similarly, do you not see, if you get people into older age, those who've gone to evil have got a trail of disaster. And it's a tragedy. But going after souls and putting that as a priority is massive. So then we're thinking about these proverbs together. And we're saying this is not so much about a specific do and don't. It's certainly a pattern rather than a promise. But it's a whole mindset. And so as we collect these things together, this is Solomon saying to us, following God is worth it. Do we have grace in the heart naturally? No. He works it in us. Are we naturally generous or selfish? Selfish. He works in us that generosity. And if we have those things worked in us, we'll see ultimately that the physical reality is not ultimate. As we want to not lay up treasures on earth, we want to lay up treasures in heaven. We look, and as the old hymn says, let me look at the crowd as my Saviour did, till my eyes with tears grow dim. Let me look till I pity the wandering sheep and love them for love of him. That's where this section climaxes and says, let's look and see the sadness of souls trapped by the devil in this world, and let's go after them. Amen.